With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
It was just the most massive thing I've ever seen. To tell you the honest truth, I thought, well, we're the only ones left on this planet. Something's happened. We've missed something here.
The fear that went in me when I seen it was just the feeling, I'd say it was fear, but I've never felt that feeling before in my entire life.
It's a weird feeling, like you can't explain it when you don't know. You feel like you're being followed, but you don't know what it is.
We had two to our right, another one in front of us, another one to the left, and another one just across the road, shaking the daylight out of the tree. All we get was a big red eye.
I remember waking up and looking at the end of the bed, and there was a figure there, almost insect-like, and then I blacked out.
Welcome to the show, everyone. My name is Cade Moyer, and you are listening to the Believe Paranormal and UFO podcast. If you have had an encounter and would like to share it, please get in touch with me. My email address is believepod@gmail.com. If you enjoy the podcast, be sure to leave us a rating or review wherever you listen and head on over to our website, believepod.com, and consider becoming a member to get bonus episodes and video content. Tonight I'm joined by Richard, and Richard had a fascinating UFO encounter back in the 1980s. Richard, welcome to the show.
Hi, Kate. I'm pleased to be on. It's I was looming and eyeing whether to come on and talk about this, but a friend of work said, yeah, you should. It's interesting and a bit dull at the same time, but if you kind of pick the bones from it and see what you think, really.
Well, I actually get really excited by people who think they have dull stories because, you know, perception is such a funny thing, because your email blew me away. I was just like, I've got to get Richard on the show. This is incredible. And before we kind of hit record, you're like, yeah, this is a bit of a dull story, but mate, take us back to 1980 and kind of just walk us through what happened here. Really paint the scene for us.
Yeah, no worries. I think it was about 1989. And I was in the British Army at the time, and I was, 22, and I was in military intelligence. And I was in military intelligence, and part of the training was observation, observing things, listening to things. So, and then when I left, I was in the police for nearly 20 years, and part of the UK police, conscription there, but recruitment is... looking at scenes and picking stuff out, picking victims, witnesses. What did you see there? You know, what was the man in the red car wearing? This kind of stuff. So I suppose I've always had a leaning towards, you know, kind of good observation and being pretty aware and pretty switched on. I thought I'd say that, so it's kind of added a bit of kind of credibility to the story I'm just going to tell you. In the British Army, certainly when I was in. Had to do, and some people weren't that kind of exercise minded. I was, but you had to do an adventure training for a month a year, and you're left to your own devices what kind of adventure training you do. One year I did went to Norway and did ice climbing. Following year I did kind of hill walking in Switzerland, and this year I decided I'd join in a Royal Signals boat. And it's a 29-foot yacht, and it's sailing from Gran Canaria in the Canary Islands across the Atlantic Ocean to Antigua. And it's about 5,000 kilometres. I'd never sailed before. Flew down to the Canary Islands, which is just off the coast of Spain, Portugal. And, met the crew. And it was, I think there was six of us, six complete novice sailors. and one skipper who was a bit kind of stern and everyone was scared off, which I suppose is quite a good thing because then he can get you to do what he wants you to do. So we all met up, complete novice sailors, never been on a boat before. And we were just going to, get on the boat and just, head off. And that was it. And the next time we touched land, we'd be 5,000 kilometres later. As it was quite 29 foot, it's quite small. So as a result, there wasn't enough beds for us all. So we had to do hot bedding, which is where you get out of one bed and the next person kind of gets in it. And it's 4-hour shifts, kind of on, 4 hours on, 4 hours off. So that's kind of where it went. You just hot bedded and you got into someone's bed and by the name, it's still hot. And you went to sleep. And then 4 hours later, somebody wake you up for, to do it, go on your shift or to steer it, the boat, or do whatever you have to do. So we headed off from Gran Canaria. And essentially, the skipper said, basically, on the night watches, you're on your own. Don't let the wind get around the back of the sail because you ripped the main sail off. And I was like, oh, that's not best. So better not do that. And also, I'll give you a compass bearing and kind of stick to it. It's like, having never been in a boat before, I was a little bit nervous, but you kind of, 22 years old, you kind of felt fit enough. I can manage this while everybody else is doing it. So as a result, at night, you tended to be on your own for 4 hours. You kind of rigidly keeping your kind of your eye on the compass, and it's completely silent, and you're just making sure the sail didn't get around, the wind didn't get around the rear of the sail, and I think it's called backing sail, and it's all bad things happen. Then the skipper wakes up, gets angry, and you don't want that. So I think we were around about the middle of the ocean. I think we either before or after we encountered the doldrums, and the doldrums was a area where there's no wind, and it basically just becalms you for a considerable period of time, really. I can't remember how long the water ago, but we either hit it or we skirted around it, so it was pretty calm water. So by my reckoning, we were kind of 2,500 kilometers from land anywhere. I was on watch, on my own. Everybody else is asleep. And I was looking at the compass, trying to keep me bearing, but there was very little wind. It was either no wind or very little wind. And it was around, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. The sea was calm, just a couple of little ripples, perhaps. It was pretty calm, and whereas basically going on at 1 or 2 knots, or perhaps even nothing. It's just that our freshwater jacket and our engine had broken; it had a leak. So the skipper was using our freshwater to run the motor. So we couldn't use the motor. It was all going a bit of a mess, really. But we were still going. And I was there steering, best I could. And there was a sort of low sea mist. I've got my eyes closed here, just trying to picture it. And it wasn't thick, but it was kind of hanging about 12 feet from the water. And it was quite a thin sea mist, but you could see through it. Your vision wasn't stopping with the mist. You could see quite a way through it. So visibility was good. It was probably half a kilometre or more. And I was just there, completely quiet, nothing apart from perhaps lapping the waves, but it was dead quiet. Then to my starboard, to my right, in front of me, I could see some lights. I thought, oh, that's interesting. I haven't seen anything for hours. I was on my watch. You sight and your hearing gets attuned to nothing. And I thought, that's interesting. And I thought, wonder if there's some boats out there. I remember seeing something about some Japanese fishing boats that used to kind of sit in the water, and it had two masts, and it had these kind of lanterns, kind of lanterns strung from these two masts on a kind of wire. And I thought, wonder if it's them. What are they doing out in the middle of here? And I was just asking myself these questions, and I was drifting closer and closer. And I could see these lights hung above the water. And the type of light wasn't, it was like, Do you know, in the 19th century, the kind of Victorian sailors, they had these kind of storm lanterns. They were kind of, you had like a wire handle at the top, you know, kind of attached to this metal bit. You had a kind of glass bit below that with the wick and the oil or whatever, and you had a kind of metal bit at the bottom where the wick was dipped into, I think, and, you know, contained the oil reservoir, and it burnt for ages. And they give these kind of, I think they're called storm lanterns. They give a particular type of light, kind of glow. I thought, oh, that looks like a kind of storm lantern. I thought, that's odd. You know, wonder what it is. Anyway, we were drifting or moving closer to these lights. And we're just kind of watching them. He's interested. And as we got closer, I thought, oh, see what kind of boats, what boat, are they fishing boats? And I thought, I can't see any boats. We got closer again, and I thought, I still can't see boats. This is a bit odd. And then I always kind of got level with these lights. And I'm just looking out my window at the moment, trying to gauge distance, probably 50, not 100 metres, perhaps that away from me, kind of starboard bow. And it's kind of like, I looked at these lights, and there must have been a couple of dozen. And they're 15, 20 feet above the water. And they're given that kind of lantern glow, which made me think that they were kind of human. But they weren't. There was absolutely nothing. There's no boats. There's nothing. There's no helicopters or anything older than that. They were just suspended in this sea fog, completely silent, and at slightly differing heights. They're all kind of, they were like, one was, you know, and then one was a foot below it, and they were, but they weren't all in the same place. They were in a, probably covering an area of like a couple of hundred square meters. And I had that kind of chill thing grab my heart. It's like, and my stomach knotted. I was like, oh crap. Yeah, I'm on my own here. I don't want to wait to skip up and say, oh, have a look at these lights. I'm sorry, you are, I've just woken you up kind of stuff. So I just had this kind of realizing I was seeing something which was not normal, not this earth, not anything. I just stared at it with kind of horror, really. It's just one minute you're tipping along, and next minute you're kind of faced with something that you thought you'd never see. So I thought, wonder what it could be. I couldn't steer towards them because, hey, I was an inexperienced sailor. I didn't want to get off my compass bearing because I didn't want any wind to get back to sail and screw stuff up. So I just kind of sat there, just transfixed, staring at it. And slowly, they kind of disappeared into my kind of rear view, really. And they just kind of hung there, completely silent. And just like these lanterns glowing with absolutely nothing holding them up, nothing. Oh, I mean, a heavy grey. I mean, the lights was probably, I don't know, a foot tall and 6 inches, 9 inches wide. And there was just a couple of dozen just hanging there, completely silent. And I didn't tell anybody about it, strange enough. You know, as a young chap in the army, wanted a good career in intelligence. And I thought, well, I think, I mean, at that time in the 80s, I think it was definitely of the you don't say anything or your career is dead kind of stuff. And to be honest, I wasn't sure what I saw. It's got to be something. It's marsh gas. I don't know. You know, it's got to be something. And I kind of always kept it in the back of my mind, but kind of never told anybody until I met a chap at work. He was into the kind of unexplained, and I told him about it. And he said, actually, that's really interesting. And I called you, Kate. So that's essentially it. It's the location that far out in the middle of the sea. Made me wonder, you know, how were they? And then later on, I've become more interested, obviously, since the Nimitz and everything. And I've heard of kind of USOs and unexplained submerged objects. And I thought, God, I wonder if they were, some kind of markers for some kind of something under the water, or is it something under the water to come up? I have not a clue what they were, but it's more the fact that their location and what were they doing? Why were they in the middle of the ocean, absolutely silently hovering there? That's it, really. That's it, really, Kate. And I quite like your take on it, and see what you think. Or any of your listeners, have they had anything similar?
Richard, that is absolutely fascinating. The fact that you're 2,000 kilometers away from any kind of like land really does make you wonder, what were these things? Because, you know, this is 1989 and, you know, drone technology wasn't a thing really back then. And I don't know if you had a radar on this boat or not, but did you notice these things on the radar by any chance?
We're talking basic here. Across, I mean, looking at back at it now, it's pretty foolhardy, really. I mean, the skipper was, we found out, pretty inexperienced. We've never been in a boat before, and it was pretty much, he's the only one on the boat who knows what they're doing. If something happened to him and he croaked it, we'd have been absolutely scuppered.
Wow.
But yeah, it was, look at the compass, don't back sail, don't wake me up. And you're like, oh, you know, fair enough. I need to keep these guys alive. This is what I'm going to do, you know. And you're pretty kind of, that's it, you know. I'm sure we must have had something. I remember going down to the cabin, there were radios and this and that, but I don't remember anything particularly advanced. It was basically, we're talking the British Army here. We were kind of, I don't think we've ever been. We've had too much money, especially not spurs on adventure training. We're pretty much down on the bare bones. So, if there was a radar, you certainly wouldn't let me use it. I'd imagine it was basically, as they said in the army, the Mark One eyeball. It's a Mark One eyeball, and you know, there we are. You're kind of looking at it, and because it took. I mean, it must have been half an hour, I suppose. It was a decent period of time because I wasn't going fast. And these things were just there. And as we're approaching, the angle changed because obviously your angle to the lights changed. You could see they were stationary, but they were all slightly different heights and just there. And I got close enough to see, Christ, they weren't glowing orbs that I've never seen a glowing orb, but in my mind, I pictured some kind of real, kicking out a lot of light. These were just there, like, you know, like at the end of a runway, you know, there's kind of the guiding lights.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Just bright. Yeah. When I think about sort of the submerged USOs, I think, God, I don't know, aliens go into water, but now you think, well, now I'm pretty sure from all the stories that they can. So I wonder if there's anything to do with that, the guiding stuff coming up or guiding stuff coming down. They didn't look, when I say, were they intelligently controlled? Probably not, really. It looked like they were there, placed there for a purpose. And there was definitely nothing holding them up, nothing holding them down. There was no noise. There was no, like a drone, but, you know, it's got the propellers or anything. It's nothing. They were actually suspended in this very light mist. And I wonder if it's because of the mist, their presence was necessary. You know, perhaps if I looked down on them for 500 feet, they would have spelled something out. I don't know.
And, you know, I was just wondering the same thing, you know, like, I wonder if these lights came with the mist, because my father, he was a fisherman for decades, for years and years and years. And he would tell me weird stories of, you know, like mist rolling in from the sea and just strange things being in it and just disappearing. And he would tell me that, you know, he would see things in the water that didn't really make sense. And then they'll be gone.
Yeah.
And I wish I pushed him more and more about it, because I would have loved to find out more about what he saw there and kind of get it on the record. But unfortunately he has cancer, and it was throat cancer, so he's lost his voice box, and I'll never be able to get a it's very unfortunate, and I'll never be able to get, I guess, a recorded history of that, which I'm really, really bummed about, to be honest, because the stories that he tells me, you know, like, I reckon there would be a lot of crossover with what you've kind of told me here tonight, because the lights just hanging there just above the sea, he's told me something like that before, and it is just so creepy. He said the same thing. He didn't know what it was. He didn't know what to think, because nothing was showing up on his radar, nothing was showing up on the sonar to say that anything was below the water. And it's a real shame that your bare bones trip didn't really have that type of equipment, because it would have been interesting to see if it showed up for you. And now a quick word from our sponsor.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Also, are you wanting more content? Why not become a Believe Plus member? You'll get access to exclusive podcasts and episodes that aren't available to the public. Not only that, you'll also get our regular feed without any ads. Head to believepod.com/plus to sign up today for just $5 a month.
Definitely. When you mentioned that, maybe remind me of my Uncle John. He passed away last year, but he was a merchant navy captain, and he worked for Geese, the banana company. And he used to sail from the West Indies and back up to the UK with loads of bananas. You know, pick them up, take stuff back. And I remember when I was a youngster, because he was always a bit mysterious. And you know, he's kind of an interesting job. You know, especially I was always into kind of action and war stuff, and he used to kind of embellish stuff. And oh yeah, I saw this and that. But yeah, you know, he kind of, you know, to his kind of 5-year-old nephew, he used to give me some of these things. I used to be enthralled, but you know, Auntie Janet, his wife, always wanted the attention, and she used to, yeah, and she used to get ignored, and I used to go, oh, Uncle John, tell me some of your stories, and he used to come out with the same things as your dad, some real kind of wacky lights, and oh, we saw this, and what was just a merchant captain telling an enthralled youngster. And what was actually true, I don't know. And it's like, Dad, you know, God, the guy was 86 when he died, and I didn't get enough information out of him, you know? It's kind of, why did I let him die before thinking about it? It's ridiculous, really.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a cautionary tale to anyone out there who has someone in their family who has encountered something weird: interview them, ask them all the questions right now, yes, because you may not get another chance.
Yeah, and then you go on a podcast a year after dying and go, oh, I wish I had spoken to him.
Yeah.
But there's clearly weird things happen out there. And I mean, it's the Nimitz episode. So obviously they were, when I say relatively close off the coast, I think they were quite close. I mean, but they obviously saw tons of stuff, and they had a huge amount of electronics and, you know, to help them see underwater and overwater, and they could measure stuff, and the stuff going up from 70,000 feet to sea level in, you know, was it a second or two? They can measure all that. So, I mean, it makes me think that obviously these sightings of these UAPs are not limited just to coasts. They, you know, they're out in the ocean as well, because I can't think of any other reason why I saw what I saw. You know, I've given it that, you know, I spoke to a few people at work, and oh no, it's this, it's that, oh, that's rubbish. Oh, it's, you know, and, but you know, when your stomach goes like that and your heart stops, it doesn't do that for nothing, does it? It does that because your first reaction is, shit, this is something real. This is something I don't know about. This is odd. And you then an evidence gatherer, as I was, you're kind of like hoovering it all up, aren't you? You know, kind of heights and this and that, and what could it be? And you're kind of, your active brain is kind of trying to make sense of it. And, you know, I like to think that 22 years old, in the job I was in, you know, I felt like I was in a kind of prime of my life, really. I'm not really scared of anything. I've, you know, forging a career. And I was actually just kind of shocked by this, really. And I still can't work out what it was, other than something, you know, a UAP or something to do, rather than a UAP, something to do with UAPs.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the only thing I can think.
Yeah, no, definitely. And you know, that's,
nothing else makes sense.
Exactly, and that's really going to lead to, you know, some questions that I have here for you, because, you know, you're 22 years old, and like you said, you are basically in the prime of your life, you're looking to really establish yourself within the, you know, the British intelligence here. You're doing this extracurricular activities for, you know, the correct purposes. And you get this just absolute sick feeling of what you're encountering. Had you ever encountered that type of fear or uncertainty in your career before?
Yeah, a couple of times. Nothing to do with UAPs. More of things like adventure training. I don't particularly like rock climbing and caving. You have to do it, and they kind of you go rock climbing with your army boots on, which are the worst things in the world for rock climbing. And the army disruptive pattern camouflage pants and your physical training top, and they kind of send you up with a little helmet on, and then laugh at you when you're halfway up and you're stuck. And the person holding the rope belaying is one of your mates who's just about as experienced as belaying as you are. You know, it's that that kind of fear when you think, hi, I'm halfway up a rock face and I don't know what I'm doing. And if I fell off, I'd hurt myself. And that kind of, it's that kind of fear, you know, that kind of.
A real primal fear, really.
Yeah. Well, it was a primal fear. And I was thinking before I came on this podcast, why was I scared? Just lights. But it's what it signified, really. Were they going to come towards me? Was there something under the water which is going to come towards me and take the boat? Or was it? It's as soon as you get to the fear of the unknown, then the fear has come in, because you're not dealing with normal stuff, are you? If it was a boy swimming around, you could see, it's just a boy. If it's a second war mine bobbing around with the horns on it, you go, oh, I'll steer clear of that. But they're all dangerous in their own way. But this was, as it's unknown, you're dealing with something which you don't know about, then I think it's the scary thing is the possibilities are limitless, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And, you know, you're so young, you're so switched on, you're so analytical about everything that you're seeing. Mm. This would have been just an absolutely mind-bending experience in 1989, because I don't feel like the whole UFO fad was something people talked about back in 1989.
Definitely not. I had read a UFO book by accident, and it was an Eric von Daniken one. We went to my dad just like browsing around secondhand bookshops. So we went to secondhand bookshop, you know, as a youngster, early teens or something. And he was there saying, oh, you know, have a look. And, I'm going off to look at whatever. And you're kind of just poking around. And I think it was in a bargain basket, 10p or something. And it was Eric von Daniken, Three Chariots of the Gods. Was that the name? But whatever. I thought that was quite interesting. And I read that. But that was just kind of, that was as far as it went. Any kind of UFO experience was limited to, reading a book like that, or, would there be something in a newspaper? I think there was something pretty major, and it may have been in a local newspaper, but there was no way of finding anything, really. It's just, my UFO or UAP experience was limited to a couple of readings of Eric von Daniken, really. I went off, joined the army, and I was, that kind of thing was pushed way back in my, back in my brain. But wish I had a camera, I mean, don't know what it was showing. It was one of those proper, you put a film in and you wind it with your thumb, make that kind of clicking noise, and then you press your button, I think you may still get them now, but you get them, in selling time by the beach, if you forgot your phone or something, you can buy one for £5 or something, It takes 20 shots, and then you get them developed, and they all come out awful. That's the kind of level of what we're talking about. So there's no phone footage or anything, and there's no witnesses. But it's, I think people who are on your podcast have said, when they're faced with stuff, your mind kind of empties. You just, you almost get a tunnel vision. You're just focused on, I say the horror, it's not like, it's just, you think, God, this is what I'm looking at. I may never see this again my whole life. I'm just, what am I, and it, it's like, I don't know, like if you saw a ghost or something, it, you know, my nan said she saw a ghost, and you know, she's not a kind of a woman she's not one for exaggerating or anything. She's very matter of fact. And so she was a chambermaid in a big building in Bristol. And she was with a friend, they shared a bed. We were talking about 1950s, and she's come across from Wales. And then she was in bed, and she noticed a figure stood over the bed and the side of her side of the bed. So she, you know, just kind of went down under the sheets and said, Sil, there's a man by her bed. They both put their head that looked at it, this white kind of thing, and they both shot down under the sheets. It never happened, and when they woke up, they're gone. But it's that kind of, she tells about it, and she's in her 80s now. It's the kind of thing, that's the only thing that's ever happened to her, but she still remembers it. You know, you can remember lots of mundane stuff, but this, when it makes you, when it shocks you, it kind of, it almost imprints it on you, doesn't it? And you kind of remember it. And that's why, I mean, I'm 54 now, so that's why 32 years later, I still remember this event. Mother-in-law still remembered her ghost thing, because when you get something shocking like that, you kind of, it's like almost indelibly imprints it on your, you can imagine what you had for breakfast this morning. If someone said, what did you have for tea yesterday? And you're, oh crap, I can't remember. Because it's fairly mundane. But when you get something like this, which makes your heart stop, it kind of imprints it on your memory, doesn't it? And that's what this did for me. It kind of imprints it because of the unknown factor, the danger that what's going to happen. I'm like, you know, are we going to be one of these boats who get sucked into the water and nobody hears it? So it's must be a freak wave. You know, this kind of stuff. You know, it basically, the world's the oyster, isn't it? You're completely at the mercy of whatever is out there.
It would have been the most high tension hour of your life.
Yeah, yeah. I still remember it now. And I shut my eyes when I was chatting to you. And, you know, I could see it. You could see them clear as day. You know, these kind of lanterns hanging there. And as you said, Kate, it'd be nice to have got an overhead view, see if they made some pattern, see if they, you know, what was the purpose of them? Were they there to, and I was thinking, oh, yeah, they're there to guide something. And I thought, what do you mean guide something? If there are UAPs, millennia more advanced than us, why would they need landing lights? They're not Orville and Wilbur Wright in 1910, are they? They don't need lights. You know, surely they can find where they need to go without having some kind of, you know, you'd think so, wouldn't you? You know, you think they'd be more advanced than Noah, but there's some lights for you, so you can find your way back to base. You know, it seems a little bit, but you know, you have to kind of apply things to, you know, the 20th or 21st century where you live. We still have landing lights, don't we? We still do that. So you have to apply things to what you know, don't you? It may be known for a purpose, which we can't even imagine, really.
Yeah, yeah, and that's exactly it. You know, when people have these types of encounters, they will always try to make it fit the paradigm that they know, because the human brain really does have to try and make sense of what it's seen. Otherwise, you kind of have a bit of a freak out moment.
Like the Romans, the flying chariots, wasn't it? Didn't they say all the stuff? Didn't they say it was like a flaming shield and flying chariots and all the, and they just use their language of what they're familiar with. And so I said landing lights because I'm just using the language of what I'm familiar with. You know, if I take me 400 or 500 years and I'd say, oh, landing lights, ridiculous. They went out years ago. It could be these, you know, you just use what you're familiar with.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the one thing I love about any type of UFO or UAP encounter is that human element of how you're deciphering what you're seeing makes it so uniquely yours.
Yes. Yeah. And as you said, and every podcast I listen to, one thing that comes across is that the narrator, the person who's had the experience, it comes across as so believable, because the person that's saying it, they actually believe it. It actually happened to them. Like I'm saying this, and as it 100% happened. It 100% happened as I'm describing it, and everybody is the same. They're 100% believing it comes across in their voice, isn't it? That, you know, they saw this Yari. There was these red eyes. There was this and that. So, but Yaris don't have red eyes. Well, they may not, but that's what I saw. You know, and that's why it's so interesting, isn't it, really? Because you've got all these people saying really believable stories, which they're telling the truth of what happened to them. and there must be an explanation for it. And you know, in the last few years, it appears we're getting closer, aren't we? Well, there's certainly big steps have been made.
Oh, most definitely. Yeah, and that's the great part about the show is like people come on here and they tell their truth of what happened, because who knows really what happened to that person? Only that person knows. And, you know, they are really retelling their encounter from their own point of view, from their own perspective, from the way that their brain kind of just digested everything that just happened to them. Because much like yourself, you know, this is a paradigm kind of breaking event. And to take that in can be extremely difficult to make sense of that. In most people have a split second of time to go, oh, wow, I saw a Yowie or I saw a UFO. But your encounter is so unique because you had an hour with about, what, 20 lights?
From 50 to
100 meters away from you? That is, I could only imagine what was swimming through your mind.
Well, yeah, first of all, you're looking for the boats, aren't you? Looking for the boats, holding them up. And then you get closer and you realize that you can see past the lights. You can see the horizon. You know, you could see the light was good. I mean, it wasn't, your eyes get acclimatized, don't they? But it was quite a light night, you know? So it wasn't dark really. It was getting light, but it was quite a good light, I'd say. I could see past them. There was definitely nothing holding them up. So you tick that off, that you meant, or tick this. Oh, is there anything above and holding them up? No, there's nothing above holding them up. Okay, right. And then you're going through it all until you come with nothing else other than this is nothing that I've ever experienced before. And you've got your stomach going, and then you think, oh, what's going to happen to me now? Have they noticed me? And then you start, it's human nature, isn't it? You start extrapolating it backwards and going, oh, right. And they notice me. Is this going to be my last 10 minutes on Earth? There's going to be something hideous rising out of water, or they're going to do this and that. But, you know, and it's the fact that as it's so unknown, they could do anything. They could ignore you. They could suck your boat down. They could teleport everyone off the boat and do whatever they want. It's basically you're completely helpless and at the whim of whatever this more powerful, this unknown entity is. And it's the complete helplessness. I mean, 22-year-old bloke, I can imagine it's only a couple of years away from you, Kate, but for me it was a long time ago. You know, you feel quite up for it, don't you, pretty much, you know, and I thought, oh, it takes all your power away and you're there going, I feel completely helpless. I'm dealing with something I've never ever, we've got no comprehension of, and I don't even want to wake anybody up. In hindsight, I should have woken everybody up. Got rang the bells and kind of got everybody, you know, photographs and this and that, and the other. And for some reason you don't. Like people say, oh, I saw this and I didn't think to pick up my phone, or and why not? I don't know. It's that tunnel vision you get, isn't it? You're just kind of concentrating on what you're dealing with.
Yeah, 100%. Your encounter is a perfect example of that. You know, you had a boat full of, what, six other people on the boat there with you, and you were there for an hour. You just fully focused on what was happening in front of you. You were kind of just transfixed. And I guess, you know, like you said, you know, if you could go back to it today, you probably would go in there and ring a bloody bell and wake everybody up and say, come have a look at this. But who knows, if you were in the whole moment again, you may not.
And that's the story of everything, isn't it? You don't think about it, or you don't do it, or you're kind of just, your faculties almost turn off to focus just on what you're dealing with, just because it's, I mean, I probably will never see anything like that. That's probably my one in a lifetime, you know, apart from the little sighting I had last year, which was nothing much compared to this. It's kind of your one in a lifetime big, like my heart stopper, like my mother-in-law with her ghost by the bed. I think quite a lot of people have their one in a lifetime kind of one thing happens to them. Some people, nothing happens to them. I think this was my kind of one in a lifetime. And I hopefully, hopefully I've got a few years left in me, as the disclosures and this happens, it will, you know, it give you a bit of a better idea I mean, USOs are quite a new thing, I think. It's becoming more and more common now, isn't it? You know, things moving at 500 knots under the sea and this and that, and, you know. And I think this is becoming, it used to just be UFOs, didn't it? But now that USOs are more, we're thinking, hang on, stuff's going on down there that we're not aware of. And
it really does make everyone's encounters just that little bit more exciting. Not that they do need to be exciting, but basically, I think like every at-sea encounter has the potential to be a USO encounter at some point.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I know they move quickly, but 2,500 kilometers from any land, perhaps they don't need land. Perhaps they're, you know, obviously the multi, was it, what's it when they go in air, sea, I can't remember, they can multi-media, is it some meeting in any medium, not be particularly bothered by what they're in? Transmedia, that's it, yeah. So, you know, perhaps being transmedium, you know, it doesn't bother them whether in, you know, by a volcano or inside a volcano or inside this, that, there, you know, they're kind of, they're happy where they are. And perhaps being the Atlantic Ocean's got some pretty deep bits, not as deep as the Pacific, but perhaps if they're tens of thousands of feet down, it's probably quite a safe place to be from prying eyes. You know, they can do whatever they like, really.
So, Richard, what do you think you saw that day? Do you think you saw a UAP? Do you think you saw something?
I'd have to say yes, because I know you're listening, you're kind of waiting for the punchline. What do people think? And they go, oh, I'm not sure. I think I'm going to nail my colours to the mast and say, yes, I did. And I've thought about it. I've thought about it for 30 years.
Yeah.
Even though it's been in the back of my mind. You're kind of, you know, when you're kind of, think about something and then you put out your mind and then think, what was it again? Put out your mind. And you always come to the same conclusion. If it wasn't, what else could it have been? You know, there's nothing in the military. There was nothing in the Navy in 1989. I mean, I still don't think there is now. I mean, I'm going to nail my colours to master. Yes, it was. I that's what I saw. I saw UAPs or small parts of or dropped by UAPs or placed there by UAPs for some purpose, which we don't know. They were there. They were there for some reason. I don't think they left them there by accident. They were there for some purpose. They served some purpose. What that is at the moment, we don't know. And hopefully we'll find out. I mean, will we? I don't know. But it's interesting being alive at this time and place, isn't it, really?
Oh, isn't it just? Isn't it just? Yes. You know, we're right on the cusp of world-shattering information about UFOs, and it almost seems like every month we're getting a new picture or a new piece of information, or they're looking into things in a more exciting way. And I am so excited to be on this side of history, to, you know, potentially be right at the front door of disclosure and just to see what that looks like.
But there's one major thing as well, is that what I'm pleased about having come on this podcast is now I've said it, and it's actually recorded, because everything these days is recorded, isn't it? You know, you've got to press a keyboard, tap on your keyboard, and it's recorded in dozens of different places, and I'm ready to be thrown back at you. This now is recorded, so should in years, you know, when I'm no longer here, my tale, however it is actually been has actually now not just got is it the owner is not just in my head, it's actually out there now, which is great, because if anybody had to trawl through stuff and, you know, decades or millennia time, they could, you know it's actually recording, it's actually out there now, which makes me happy.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Believe Paranormal and UFO podcast. If you have had an encounter and you would like to share it, please get in touch with me. My email address is believepod@gmail.com. Finally, don't forget to follow us on all our social media outlets and be sure to join our Discord server to talk to other listeners of the show. You'll find all these links in our show notes. Thank you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.